Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Back in 1979, as director of the Congressional Budget Office, Alice Rivlin addressed the members of a task force on the budget process in Congress. She told them, most, if not all, of the important issues the Congress will face in the next decade have important implications for the budget. An effective budget process, therefore, is one of Congress's most essential tools. This week, as the supercommittee crumbled without compromise, Rivlin, now a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, who advised the supercommittee, called its failure a disappointment and a missed opportunity.
Each side distrusted the other. The Democrats were afraid to offer serious entitlement cuts because they thought the Republicans will just take that and then not give any revenues. The Republicans said if we offer serious revenues, the Democrats will just take that, and they're not serious about the entitlement cuts.
Sounds like a game of congressional chicken. So what do you think? Who's most at fault? The Republicans who rejected any ideas of ending the Bush cuts for the wealthy, or the Democrats who rejected any ideas for cuts to entitlements? It's an open forum this hour, and I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go onto the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. I have it up right here. Love to see what your questions and comments are there, and you can tweet me at @AnnFisherWOSU. So that's the super committee, or not so super committee. Locally, what do you make of the mayor's plan for curbside recycling? We had him on last week. He says it's way past time to put Columbus in the category of big cities with recycling programs like this. But City Council President Andrew Ginther is less sure that it's the right time given the economy. Do you agree with City Council President Andrew Ginther or Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman? 614-292-8513 is the number to call. It is an open forum this hour if you're just joining us, and we'd love to hear from you, see what you want to talk about. There's always lots to talk about this time of year. So give us a call or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And what of this weekend's pepper spraying incident at the University of California at Davis? Some students and others are determined to force out the school's chancellor after police in riot gear used pepper spray and batons to break up a peaceful protest. A video of the incident has since gone viral. We've posted a link to one of the videos just in case you missed it. You can go to WOSU.org/allsides and check out that video right now and tell us what you think. What do you think about the Occupy movement in general here and elsewhere? Has it run its course? Is it misunderstood or right on target? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Another topic, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich arrived in New Hampshire yesterday. He became the fifth Republican contender to climb to the top of the public polls this year. He again announced his plans to reform Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and various programs for the poor. He backs the idea of replacing Social Security with private savings accounts for seniors. He also believes that states should administer Medicaid with federal block grants, and he's down on food stamps and public housing. He thinks that schools should fire their unionized janitors and replace them with kids. What do you think? Listeners, if you vote in the Republican primaries, who's your pick? What do you think of the current leader, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich? I should say the former leader in the polls. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Hi, Troy in Grove City. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I didn't think it was fair to say that Republicans want to, not end Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthy. I think the Republicans see that private businesses are the job creators, not government, and they're trying to protect job creators, or they're at least trying to keep an eye on that. I honestly don't think Republicans are trying to protect tax cuts for wealthy people.
Well, that is the way it's being. I mean, they're saying that people, that those tax cuts would affect if they were reinstituted would affect job creation, but it does boil down to tax cuts and taxes for wealthy people who earn more than $1 million a year.
Well,
people do disagree over whether or not that actually generates jobs down the road.
Well, definitely the government doesn't. Mm-hmm. The government's not capable of creating a job machine, you know, a machine that creates jobs. The government is paid for by the people in private business, who work for private businesses and own private businesses, who have their money taken from them and given to the government to drive the government. You know, and in that capitalist machine is where the jobs are created. Happy people with happy jobs and happy homes. And they have to work for somebody. And if you lynch those people in a political sense and a tax sense, there's not going to be anybody to work for. I don't know. I just think that the Republicans are looking at the big picture and saying, let's not cut off our nose to spite our face. Let's try and find a balanced way to approach this without killing the capitalist system. I mean, I don't know. I'd rather work for a private person than work for the government.
Hmm.
And I'd rather there be more private people to work for and less government to work for.
Hmm.
And I think that's the way the Republicans feel. I don't think they're trying to I don't think they're trying to bend over backwards just to favor rich people. I really don't. I think ultimately they're looking out for all of us.
Sometimes people say, show us the jobs. Show us the jobs that the tax cuts already have provided and created. And that's where I say the disagreement lies, is whether they actually do create jobs when they cut taxes for wealthy people.
I guess that's the debate, but mm-hmm. I honestly don't think the Republicans are trying to protect wealthy people for the sake of wealthy people. I think okay. they're looking out for where's the income coming for the government. And, mm-hmm. that's where it comes from.
What do you feel like about the super committee? Should they have found some kind of compromise anyway? I mean, everybody's got to give something.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I agree with you 100%. What a golden opportunity that was. What happened, you know?
Who knows? We did try to get Senator Portman on the phone today for the show. He is going to be in Columbus later today and at some kind of a press availability, but we won't be able to get him on the show. But, yeah, it would be great to know what was going on. Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall?
Would I ever. Well, thanks for listening to my opinion, Ann.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Troy. We have an open forum today. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't forget our social media. We are on Facebook, and you can tweet me at Ann Fisher, WOSU, if you want. Bob in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
All through the spring, while we were cheerleading for those freedom fighters in Arab countries, I kept thinking, I wonder what we'll do if that will ever happen here.
Yeah.
And now I know. We'll pepper spray them, shoot rubber bullets, throw cans of things at them and other things. Hypocrisy, if hypocrisy was the coin of the realm, would be rich.
You think there's a direct parallel then between what was going on in, say, Egypt, where they were under a dictatorship, and what's going on in the United States with the Occupy movement?
Well, what do you mean by direct?
Well, you compared the Arab Spring and said, wonder what would happen if something like that's going to happen in the United States.
Sure. We're not perfect in history. There aren't any perfect countries.
Well, I'll agree with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you do, then it seems to me that the people, that the best that we could say is people should be able to choose their own form of government.
Okay.
And they were choosing, that was the purpose of the group in Tunisia, Libya, and other people.
In Libya and elsewhere, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And here, it's at least being contested.
Okay.
Like, try to start a polite conversation about inequality over dinner at Thanksgiving this year.
Okay.
Or then try incivility.
Okay.
I'll bet you that you can get more people to talk about incivility uncivilly than you can people about injustice who they don't want to talk about that at all.
That's an interesting distinction. Bob, thanks for your call.
Thank you for taking it.
Take care. You bet.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513. Charles wants to continue the conversation about the super committee. Welcome to the show, Charles. Hi, Charles. Do I not have Charles on? Hi, Charles, are you gone? Well, then bye-bye, Charles. Let's try Don in Cincinnati. Hi, Don. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. One thing that I'd like to take real exception to is the idea that the government doesn't provide jobs for the people, like all the Republicans are wanting to say.
The point that Troy made early on?
Well, somewhat to that effect, mm-hmm. but perhaps even more succinctly. People don't remember FDR and the Works Progress Administration or the Civilian Conservation Corps or all these little government programs that made jobs for so many people. And to bring that to a real crystalline point that in I guess it's Minnesota or wherever it was, there was the two bridges up there. You'll remember there were two bridges. The one bridge was built by General Eisenhower in his attempt to provide jobs next to a big old arc cement bridge that was built 9-to-1 by FDR, like the exact form. And the older bridge held up where the newer bridge fell down. And even I can see, therefore, why the Republicans wouldn't be able to say that the providing of jobs to the public by the government it wouldn't work.
This was when Eisenhower created the interstate highway system in the United States.
Yeah,
created a lot of jobs doing that, I would imagine.
Yeah, but apparently they weren't good enough jobs because his wonderful work didn't hold up as well as the older work by FDR.
Hmm. Well,
and if anybody knows for sure about the date of that, the other bridge was right next to the bridge that fell in.
Where is that? I'm sorry, Don. Where was that again?
I think it was in Minnesota, St. Paul or something.
Okay. Oh, that bridge. I gotcha. The one that collapsed a few years back. And
yeah, they had the footage on, but if you'll notice, yeah, there's a bridge right next to it, an old concrete bridge, arch bridge, and I'll bet you a nickel that was FDR bridge.
Hmm. Okay. All right, Don. Thanks for your call.
Sure.
Take care. We are having an open forum this hour. We have calls coming in. I want to get to all of them. If you would prefer to email us, you can at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go onto the Facebook page. I've got it right in front of me. Or you can go to Twitter and send your note to me at @AnnFisherWOSU. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
FM is your source for NPR news and local news. Stay up to date with issues impacting life in Central Ohio. The award-winning WOSU News team keeps you connected to the community, and the Statehouse News Bureau has the latest in-depth coverage of state government. Listen to news from across the country and from our own backyard on 89.7 NPR News and streaming online at WOSU.org.
And thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. 47 degrees with rain in downtown Columbus. Expect rain and thunderstorms off and on throughout the day and warming up to a high of 63. More rain for tonight, a low of 44 degrees. The rain will taper off by Wednesday morning, gradually becoming sunny in the afternoon and a high of 53. Wednesday night, clear skies, a low of 31. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. It's an open forum on All Sides today. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's a lot to talk about. There's the super committee, or not, depending on your point of view, in Washington. There is the mayor's plan for curbside recycling in Columbus. There is the pepper spraying incident at the University of California at Davis, which, you know, brings up to the issue, us to the issue of the whole Occupy movement in general. And also former House Speaker Newt Gingrich is at the top of the pile in the Republican primary race, at least in the polls he is. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. And I'm going to turn to Mac in Columbus right now. Mac, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to say a word about this super committee,
mm-hmm.
and the blame is squarely on Republicans because they're not a good partner. They put the party ahead of the country, as it's very clear for me. So I just want to say the word this one.
Okay. That's it?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
take care, Mac.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Murph in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Murph.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
Sorry, I get a little bit of congestion.
Okay.
You know, I just don't realize the occupied folks. I don't know how anybody hasn't drawn a parallel from the initial books of Karl Marx and Lenin. That's exactly what they did in order to promote communism. Now, you're going to think I'm crazy or no loon. And that's okay. I got a couple of ex-wives that believe that too, but the idea is to disrupt society.
Hmm. Have they achieved that goal, though, do you think?
Well, they're trying. Hmm. They're trying. Do I think they have? No, probably not. But the longer we let this go on, the more likely it is to happen.
Well, what you suggest that we as in society not let them express themselves this way?
No, I don't mind them expressing themselves, mm-hmm. but for crying out loud, don't come up and say everything's broke and we got to change it. Give us a list of your concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that yet. Have you?
It's the nature of the movement. It doesn't have one, but how does that reflect Karl Marx and, you know, that in what way? I mean, Marx was pretty clear on what his goals were.
Well, he was, but his first concern was to disrupt the existing society. And that appears to be their first intent.
That was the goal when they had the civil rights demonstrations in the South in the 60s, too.
Well, I don't think that's comparable. I mean, that was... They had a defined set of...
True. Exactly. They were more comparable to Karl Marx in a way. I mean, just in terms of having a very clear goal.
Yeah. I don't know. It defies my imagination how nobody has considered that the occupiers are essentially anarchists or, and I hate to use the word, communists. I mean, they're out to disrupt the existing society.
Okay. All right, Murph. Thanks for your call.
Well, I hope you don't think I'm a loon.
I never call any of my listeners loons. That's just a principle on my part. I do not do that. I appreciate you for listening, and I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
So what do you think? What do you think of the Occupy Wall Street movement, Occupy movement around the country? Do you think it's a economic, political, economic issue, that it's just communists, socialists wanting to disrupt society or not? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Anne in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ann. Hi,
Ann.
Hello. Hi.
I wanted to comment on the super committee.
Sure.
I am really disgusted with the fact that they couldn't come up with a solution. And I do blame the Republicans because their stated goal has been to make Barack Obama a one-term president. And all their actions are truly pointing toward that. They are not for the people. They are for the Republican Party. And I'm an independent voter, and I really try to vote for the best person for each of those, you know, the jobs that we vote on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pushing me out of that mode and looking at more at the Democrats who want to be nonpartisan and want to, in my opinion and from my observation, work together to come to compromise. And they're really disgusting. I'm very, very disappointed in their actions.
Don't you feel like it's the whole issue of distrust? When I, at the top of the hour, when I was talking about it, kind of described it, it's, you know, it's kind of a game of chicken. Who's going to go first? Who's going to make the sacrifice first so that the other side will then compromise and throw something into the pot? Nobody seems to want to make that first move.
Well, it's very hard to compromise with a group that will not compromise at all or even look at it. And it's their stated goal to not compromise. It's just very disappointing. And as a voter, they're not going to get my vote at all.
Did you have high expectations of the super committee in the first place?
Not real high, because I really have the sense that the Republicans were just giving lip service, and they're really not serious about nonpartisan politics at this point.
Okay.
I think their true goal is to make the president look as bad as possible, to prove that he couldn't achieve his goal that he wanted. But they blocked everything and truly are a partisan. And I'm really disappointed in that, and it's making me angry.
Okay. All right,
so that's what I wanted to say. So
okay.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Does anyone agree or disagree with Ann about the super committee and about the politicization of it? Anybody disagree that it's not the Republicans' fault, it's the Democrats' fault, or it's everybody's fault, or it's nobody's fault? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Lisa in Columbus.
You?
Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to speak to the issue and piggyback on what the caller prior to me was saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm disappointed as well. I think you have, with the super committee, that is, you have 12 seasoned politicians who can't get together on one of the most important issues and policies facing our nation at this time. So it's really unacceptable. And the fact that we as Americans aren't making them, holding their feet to the fire and making them do what they're supposed to do is even more disappointing to me. Because,
hey, Lisa, could I interrupt you for just a second? Do you have your radio turned up? Can you turn your radio down?
Yes, I can.
Okay,
I can turn
great.
It off.
I want to hear you better.
Okay. I just think it's unacceptable.
Okay.
How do you have 12 politicians go in a room with something this important and come out and say we don't have anything done? I mean, on your show, if you had a 9% rating on your show, you wouldn't be there. If you had an important task to do or an important interview and you were not able to deliver the interview, I'm certain that there would be repercussions on your job, just like we all have. We all live in the real world. We mm-hmm. all have to face these issues on a daily basis. And we don't have the benefit of doing what we want to do when we want to do it. And I think that that's kind of where Congress is. They do what they want to do, what serves them and their needs first and foremost. And we just get in wherever we can fall in, and that's how we're perceived. We don't really matter, and no one's speaking to that issue. I mean, as a group, I think America needs to bounce back. And I can't say I agree or I disagree with the Wall Street movement, but I do understand their frustration. It's not that, you know, if those people had a job to go to, many of them wouldn't be there. So, and I'm not saying that the U.S. government is supposed to create jobs, but speaking to the super committee and not raising taxes, it's been my experience in life and many, many years of being on Earth that in many cases, when you don't make individuals do what they're supposed to do, they don't do it. So I think that without someone to mandate that individuals hire, that banks spread the money around to pass to
United U.S. businesses are sitting about $1 trillion worth of capital right now.
Exactly. And what's happening with it? So what has happened is those businesses and the banking systems have been allowed to make profit. It's no longer about making a profit for businesses in America. It's about making a killing. I mean, how much money do you really need to make? I mean, you know what I mean? I agree. I'm all for capitalism. I'm not disagreeing with that. But, I mean, what is enough? Is $1 billion enough, or do you have to have $20
billion? Okay.
You know, and when you have $20 billion and your most of your employees can barely make it from paycheck to paycheck, you would think that at the top that someone would look and say, okay, the person who's failing the business the most, who's making the most mistakes, who's the most ineffective, that person should get a $5 million raise, and the people at the bottom should take 1 or 2% who are doing all the work. In what situation is that fair and equitable?
Okay.
So that's my comment.
Okay.
You know, if someone else has some other comments, I would be interested.
Oh, they
them.
Do. They do,
okay.
Lisa. Thanks for
all
calling.
Right. All right. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yes. We have lots of people who want to talk about it. I want Jennifer to hold on. She wants to talk about that recycling program. Hang in there, Jennifer. Let's continue the super committee conversation for now, though. And I'm going to go to John in New Albany because I'm curious to hear what you have to say, John. Welcome to the show, John.
Hey, yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoyed the lady that was speaking to you.
Okay.
She really covered a lot of ground and did it very eloquently. One of my big gripes is this morning when I read this interview with alleged interview with Mr. Portman, Senator, he maintains that the Democrats were proposing taxes that would eventually amount to $1 trillion over, I believe, the 10-year lifespan of whatever it was they were trying to do. I find that to be bogus because when you started your program, you were talking about Alice Rivlin and how she established the Congressional Budget Office. One of the things this super committee was supposed to do, one of their deadlines was to have their proposals together and then marked up by the CBO so that they could give you a cost figure or a savings figure.
But they would have to have a couple days to do that. That's why they...
Yeah, exactly,
right.
And that never happened. So where does Portman come up saying, oh, it's going to cost you $1 trillion? This is Republican baloney. Now, I respect the man, and I know he's knowledgeable, but we all have to be aware of what the criteria was for the super committee to even do anything, and that was to present proposals to be costed by the nonpartisan CBO, and that never happened. So any numbers we hear that are going to be floated around blaming one side or the other are already bogus.
That's a good point. They're coming from a point of view. At least we don't know if they're bogus. The point is that it wasn't the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office that put those numbers together. They
right.
never received the plans because the plans were never agreed to, and that's why they needed to do it by yesterday so that they would be able to have a few days to crunch these numbers and have it ready by the Wednesday actual deadline. So, all right,
that's correct,
John. Good
that's
point.
Correct.
Thanks.
And, the other thing is, I referenced Mr. Gingrich and his jobs.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe he wants to do away with child labor laws.
Right. Well, he
okay.
thinks they're
and,
stupid, I think was the
stupid,
word.
So I don't know what he wants to do with those stupid laws. But I did like the bit about custodians being fired and we'll let the kids take care, you know, do the custodial work. So I guess you're going to have a 7-year-old at some elementary school run down and start the boilers in the morning. Is that right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And I was interested to learn yesterday that in reading about this, that school custodians' work is ranked right up there with police and firefighters in terms of danger and or injuries on the job.
Yeah, because remember, they're out there, well, I don't know.
Well, lifting fact, things, you know.
They're out there replacing the broken glass, but they're also out there shoveling right. sidewalks at 6 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. and they're putting down salt, and they're, you know, wiping up all the water. The kids come in. They're trying to, they're trying to put the gym together so that you can have a program or your
setting up chairs and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, you know. So, but that's not to say that all custodians are really doing that. My wife can speak to several schools in this area where one or two did the work and two or three sat on their buns. So there is something to be said about that.
Oh, you give me an office, I'll show you that. But, John, thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
And, happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Same to you. Adrian, I'm looking for you. There you are. Adrian in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Yeah, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, my comment is about this super committee thing, and the reason why I'm calling is I got into a conversation with my dad last night, and what I was thinking about was the Constitution and the whole thing about the Founding Fathers, okay? And if you think about the Constitution in its original form, it was only designed for 13 states, 13 colonies that were supposed to be states, okay? And so you have, like, these group of men who came together and formed this Constitution, and you only had, like, a certain amount of people that were a part of the government and a certain amount of people who were there to kind of guide what's going on in terms of how this country is supposed to be. Now, you blast that 200 years into the future, okay, and here we are today, and we have, like, I don't know how many senators, how many House representatives, districting, redistricting, and then you have all these, you know, ideas and philosophies that's trying to come together.
You know, party politics wasn't part of the original plan.
Exactly.
That evolved, or devolved, however we want to look at it.
And so my thinking is that, you know, if you look at it within the past 10 years, the only time this country even moves forward, whether you agree with it or not, is when you have a carte blanche, you know, all powerhouse standing up from the president to the Senate to the House of Representatives, and it's all Democrats.
Well, it's not the only time. That's,
you know,
that's one of the ways, but other times are when they compromised.
Well, how much compromise have we had within the past, you know,
right.
within the past 10 years?
But, your compromise is part of the whole kind of, supposed
yeah.
to be part of the,
you're,
you
yes,
know,
you're absolutely
the grand
right.
scheme of things, but.
But I feel that, you know, at this point that we've had, I think at this point and maybe going on to the future, that I feel that there's too many politics and there's too many hands in the pot. And so this whole checks and balances thing, is, I think, has gone way too out of whack. Now, I don't want to seem like, I'm a Marxist or a communist mm-hmm. or anything, but I'm feeling that maybe, you know, maybe there has to be a change in the modus operandi. Because mm-hmm. to me, you know, when we can't just come together and see a problem that's square in our face, and we're too busy worried about party politics, who's going to be the next president and who's not going to be the next president, and so forth and so on, I feel that there's too many hands in the pot.
Hmm.
I've always felt, and now you can call me crazy if you want.
You're the second person to say that to me today. I don't do that to my listeners. Okay, go ahead.
But I've always felt that, you know, maybe we should reform it in terms of this. And, I think I always felt that we should have just three parts of government, okay? You have the president and his administration. Then you take out the House of Representatives and the Senate, and your checks and balances would be the 50 governors across the state, across the country, and the media.
Whoa. Okay. Well, I'm not going to comment on that.
I mean, just to think about it, you know what I'm saying? because, I mean, if you just, the media would be the checks and balances in terms of what's going on. With
yeah, but media's very changed. That's a whole other story. That's a whole other show. We have to take a break right now, Adrian. Something to think about, though. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Before we go, I want to just read from Valerie on Facebook. She says, the Bush-era tax credits have been in place for more than a decade. Where are the jobs? The GOP will hold the economy hostage with their Norquist pledge. Whatever happened to working for your constituents and upholding the Constitution? From Alex on Facebook, he says, it is on my mind today that in Egypt, the protesters are being hit by bullets and tear gas and other crowd control stuff that all says made in USA all over it. And from Bob and Bexley, an email, he says, first of all, I challenge the common misuse of the word entitlements to describe Social Security and Medicare. We pay into those insurance programs, and that is what funds them. An entitlement is something one gets for nothing just because you were born into the position, like an English lord, for example. Furthermore, how can anyone with any memory of the recent current economic crash even think seriously about replacing Social Security with insecure stock market accounts? When we return, we'll continue our conversation. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Jackie Leiden. Coming up on the next On Point, super failure for the super committee. Now what? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with Tech Tuesday, a discussion of social media and shopping, ultrabooks, and the best gadgets to buy for the holiday season. Join us for Tech Tuesday at 11 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, celebrating the season with Home for the Holidays. Vocalist Helen Welch joins the CJO in this annual tradition of holiday favorites, November 30th through December 4th at the Southern Theater. Details at jazzartsgroup.org.
And you can listen to 89.7 NPR News anytime by streaming on the web. Just visit WOSU.org and click on the Listen Now button at the top of the page. Listen to local and national news from your computer or mobile device. Just visit WOSU.org. Rain in the forecast for today, even some thunderstorms, a high of 63. More rain for tonight, a low of 44 degrees. Expect some rain Wednesday morning, tapering off in the afternoon with some sun and a high of 53. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to our open forum on All Sides today. We have been pretty much talking solidly about the super committee and the Occupy Wherever movement. We do have a call we're trying to get to about the recycling program in Columbus, but let's continue our talk about these larger issues right now. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Ernest in Columbus, you want to talk about the Occupy movement. Welcome.
I have the Occupy movement. And the other thing I really wanted to say was, the Occupy movement is pretty upset about the bonuses that were paid out after the banks were supposed to be bailed out. And on top of that, when you think in the last 30 years that the executives' pay has gone up 400%, while workers' pay hasn't gone up even half that much, that's a cause for outrage, and it tends to separate people when you think about that, especially after you've gotten bonuses to help the economy get better. You know, after you've gotten a bailout to help the economy get better, and the first thing you do is pay out bonuses before someone leaves. The other thing is that on this tax committee, the refusal to negotiate on some increases and entitlements and so back and forth like that, this doesn't seem to be a sense of sacrifice. And I think, I'm not sure, but this Norquist pledge of no taxes, that to me seems to be a conflict of interest between your duty as a congressman and service to the people, and Norquist is in the middle there somewhere. I don't know. George Bush Sr., he says no new taxes. Everybody laughed at him when he raised taxes, but when push came to shove, he did what was best for the country, despite what was going to be good for him politically.
And wasn't he a one-term president?
He was a one-term president because of that, and that just goes to show you where our minds are at as a people. You'd rather have someone be loyal to your cause, your own cause, than to do what's best for the country at the time.
Okay.
And that's really saying a lot about where our head's at as a country. It's time, I think, for these people who make a lot of money to think about whether or not they're living beyond their means. They talk about people who are below, you know, in lower income brackets that are not living at their means. Maybe you're making too much money and you want money, more money, because you can't pay the taxes or you don't want to pay the taxes. So perhaps you're living above your means. And I think that a lot of this has to do, like the lady before me said, that having to do with Obama being a first president. Mitch McConnell stated that that was his primary goal.
Okay.
So that's pretty much what I wanted to say.
Okay.
And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thank you, Ernest. 614-292-8513. Tom and Marion, you're next. Wait a minute. Yeah. Tom, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Yes, good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
Regarding the super committee, it appears to me that a significant factor in the failure of that committee to get this job done was a group called Americans for Tax Reform.
Mm-hmm.
Previous caller mentioned the name of its
Grover
leader,
Norquist,
Grover Norquist.
Right.
For someone to be appointed to a committee like that is as important as it is, and involves negotiating. Anyone who had taken that pledge seemed to me did not belong on the committee. The second thing is really a question. Is there any way that you can get a name or a list of the names of those who have made that pledge? Is that available? I haven't really tried very hard yet, but I would like to know who has taken the pledge, because they take it very seriously, apparently.
That's a good question. I don't know. It doesn't seem like anyone's keeping it a secret when they have signed it, but I would imagine if they have a website, it's probably somewhere around there. It'd be something that they'd want to keep public.
Yes. Well, I'll do some looking, and if one of your callers, future callers, knows that, I'd love to know it.
All right.
Okay? Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Charles in Columbus. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. You said Columbus. You caught me off guard. I said Jacksonville. I said it was confusing. I said, well, I'm in Columbus, but I'm from Jacksonville, so I was kind of waiting on Jacksonville. But
anyway, Jacksonville, Florida?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Driver.
What are you doing up here, Charles? That's all I got to say.
You know, it's really a great area. I'm here frequently.
And, yeah, I feel like gray skies. And okay. go ahead, Charles. Welcome to the show.
Okay. Well, you know, the caller before the last caller made an interesting point talking about George Bush Sr. I got to touch on that, you know, and I think we're seeing what would have happened if that was a two-term president, if you want to really know what I think. But, you know, because we were already in a recession. I think everybody forgets so quickly how, you know, and everybody's forgetful and forgetful about things. But, you know, we were already in a pretty good recession whenever he left office.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, George Jr. gets elected, and here we are after the second term. And not to say that's all his fault or anything. And I don't necessarily agree 100% with what Obama's done. I mean, I'm a Democrat, but I think our priorities were a little off whenever he started in the office and jumped on health care, whenever we should have been looking closer at the economy to begin with. And I think it kind of snowballed out of control when we should have really been doing something much sooner, and we could have made a lot of smaller changes, I think, at that time that would have made a bigger, longer lasting improvement over time.
Now, some people would say that actually the changes should have been bigger, that first economic stimulus package wasn't enough, and that's why it's hard to prove a negative, but that it wasn't enough.
Sure.
Okay.
I can see that. When you talk about the savings alone and everything, you know, I think a lot of that might have been put in the wrong place. I'm sure we all kind of regret that now, you know, where, yeah, we needed to save them and we needed to do a bailout there. But I think there should have been more stipulations, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been the move in the right direction. So I think we were on track with that, but I think it should have just had a little more mandate about it.
Well, that's exactly what the banks did not want.
Mm-hmm.
Charles, thanks for your call.
Sure, thank you.
Take care. We've got Joshua on Twitter says, the Occupy Wall Street movement lists a declaration of specific concerns on their website that all center on the dangers of excessive corporate greed. Everyone should check it out. Kevin on Twitter asks, so if the congressional approval rate drops to zero, are they all fired? Email from Jack. Today, all legislation is affected by outside money. In order to return the government to the people, we must pass a constitutional amendment stating corporations are not people, money is not speech, and campaigns for all federal offices will be financed by public funds. Thanks for that email, Jack and Kevin and Joshua. Thanks for the messages on Twitter. We have an email from Debbie. I blame the American people for the failure of Congress. I think most voters spend more time planning their Thanksgiving dinner than they do researching who they should vote for. As a result, we have a bunch of turkeys in office. Debbie, thank you for that seasonal comment. We appreciate it. 6-1. Well, we're running out of time. I want to get to the calls that are here. Deborah, I'm looking for you. And Deborah in Northern Kentucky, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Since it seems that with both the Republicans and Democrats in the Super Committee, what it always boils down to is whether or not to extend or even make less the tax cuts. I would just like to put this out there, and I'm certainly not an actuary, but I know that there are plenty of them out there, many unemployed who would love to jump in on this. How if we just made it so if those in the high-income tax bracket could show and prove indisputably that they are creating jobs with their tax?
Well, how do you create jobs? I mean, I guess part of it's the idea that companies would be, you know, reinvesting capital in the economy and, you know, hiring people and that sort of thing. But other people, they don't necessarily own a company. They just have a lot of money. I mean, how many washers and dryers?
Jobs.
Yeah, but how many washers and dryers can you buy? You know?
Well, exactly. So they should be able to prove that they are creating jobs with that money, or else they should pay the higher tax. And I don't think that anyone on either side of Wall Street would find conflict with that. If they can create jobs with their wealth, fine. They can make more wealth from it, and they can keep the higher, lower tax break. If not, they should pay the higher tax break.
Okay.
That's the argument the Republicans always make, is that those in the higher income bracket need to keep their money so they can create jobs. Then let them create jobs. And if they can, they can keep the lower tax break.
Okay. Deborah, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call and thanks for listening. All the way from Northern Kentucky, we have a list of the pledge signers sent by wonderful Karen Kassler from Ohio Public Radio. Thanks, Karen. In Ohio, Ohio Senator Rob Portman, Ohio U.S. Rep. Steve Chabot, Gene Schmidt, Mike Turner, Jim Jordan, Bob Latta, Bill Johnson, Steve Austria, John Boehner, Pat Tiberi, Steve LaTourette, Steve Stivers, James Renacci, hope I'm pronouncing that right, and Bob Gibbs, all Republicans, of course, have all signed the pledge for Grover Norquist. So there we go with that. 614-29. Well, I'm not giving out the number anymore because I can't get to everybody as it is. James in Euclid, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, James.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'll clear the air right away. I am a left-wing loon, so make that be understood. I watched the City Club the other day.
In Cleveland?
In Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And I saw Alan Simpson on there, the retired senator that's on the committee. And I've found him very entertaining. He's got a tremendous wit. He's very funny. I've seen him speak a number of times on television. But after, you know, this is just gut level and uneducated opinion. That's what I'm calling myself, uneducated opinion. I'm no political genius, or financial genius. But after listening to him, just gut level, now there were some things I could agree with him on, some of the things he was rattling off a lot of information. He covered a lot of ground. But after listening to him, when he got on the subject of Social Security, I basically got to the point where I just looked at the TV and I said, this guy is a sarcastic right-wing whack job. You know, I mean, you're supposed to have fair, you know, try to be unbiased people on this committee. And just to pick out one thing, the Social Security thing, and it clicks in with everything else that everybody in the country is saying about people paying their fair share. I'm a AARP member, and maybe I've been brainwashed, but when it comes to Social Security, the thing I hear over and over again is if they make adjustments and people put into the system who are supposed to put in the system their fair share, Social Security could be just about corrected. as far as, you know, money in the future available for people that are going to retire. Now, maybe I'm ignorant on that, but I was just kind of really blown off my shoes there when I saw Alan Simpson's, because I'm thinking that this guy, when I saw him in the past, I thought, this guy's pretty sharp. He'd be a good one to have on a committee like that. But after hearing him in the City Club, I mean, I may be biased and uneducated, but the guy just impresses me as being, I'm sorry, you know, he uses funny phrases too, but he's, you know, a right-wing whack job.
Okay.
You know? I don't think we're going to get too much fairness out of this guy. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, James, for giving us a call from Euclid.
Thank you.
Let's see. Who can I get next? Mark in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hey, thanks for taking my call,
mm-hmm.
Ann. I'll try to be quick. There are just a couple of things. Based on previous callers, the idea that tax cuts create jobs or whatnot, if you take that as a hypothesis and 10 years go by and the jobs haven't been created, you can pretty much say without question that the hypothesis is false. And, you know, to hear callers calling up and just repeating these right-wing talking points, basically it's political dogma. It's a belief that is unsubstantiated and a really, you know, I'm surprised that anyone would buy it, but I guess there's a political agenda behind it. And then also the Occupy Wall Street, I keep hearing this, and it's all over the media. I think it's a media meme that we don't know what they want. What do they want? Well, something that I find very ironic is that take a look at Goldman Sachs and the scheme they cooked up to bilk people out of their hard-earned money and their pension. And they bilked people out of billions of dollars in this scheme. It was a scheme. It was fraudulent. They cooked up these investments. They were counting on them failing. And when they failed, they made out like bandits.
We're running out of time, Mark.
And so we see these Occupy people being arrested. Well, is that not just ironic to anybody? I mean, who should be arrested here? It's not the Occupy people. And so don't tell me that we don't know what they want. I can tell you exactly what they want. Fairness, they want economic justice, and they want not to be called communists because people don't understand what's going on and they can't think of anything better to say. So stop calling people communists.
Mark, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Thanks for waiting in. To everybody out there that was waiting a long time and did not get on, I apologize. We couldn't get to everybody. We tried our hardest. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.